Blog Talk Radio.
Here we are on a beautiful, beautiful Wednesday night, a special edition of the Charlotte Line. This is Dr. John Stamey. So glad to have the crew back with us. And we're going to have a great show tonight. It's a special one-hour episode. We'll be back, of course, next Tuesday night. Same bat time, same bat channel, like we always are. But right now, I want to introduce our co-hosts from Studio G in Greenville, South Carolina. Zach Belcher, this is terrible.
Wow.
Zach Beechler, how are you? I've only known you for years. How are you doing, Zach?
Years. You've only known me about 9 months. I am good. It is great to be back. I actually was up in the Midwest this week and got to hang out with a few people. One of them might be here right now, hopefully.
Well, let's hope he is. Brady, how are you doing tonight? Brady Van Sickle.
Oh, not doing too bad. Just kind of vibing on a Wednesday, you know.
Vibing on a Wednesday? Okay. Yeah, I'm just crazy on a Wednesday as usual. We just got done with pop culture stars and yelling at each other about UFOs and Bigfoot. It was a lot of fun. So what's going on in the racing world? I want to know.
Well, in the racing world, it was kind of strange. We had a Sunday with no race, not because of a holiday or anything, but because we kind of had an odder schedule. We had four races, two truck, one Xfinity, and a cup race. And the cup race is the first race we'll talk about because it was the first race that was ran up at the lovely Kansas Motor Speedway that actually both of us have been to, me and Brady have, correct?
Correct, and Kansas was a very beautiful track. It reminded me a lot of the Iowa Speedway, just twice as big.
That's always a good sign. It reminds you of, and me personally, Iowa's my favorite track. I think you feel the same way, right? It's basically your favorite track.
Oh, definitely. It definitely got a little bit of a bias there, but I've only been to two or three NASCAR-sanctioned tracks, so I feel like I need to broaden out my sample sizing a little more, but we'll see here.
That's very true. Well, it wasn't just a normal, I can't even say weekend, because this was a Thursday night race, and it's not the first time NASCAR has held Thursday night races, but never the Cup Series in the modern era. It's not like we had an actual point-sanctioned race. Obviously, the Daytona duels are ran on Thursdays, but when it comes to full-fledged point races, the winner gets 40 points or what have you. This is the first time in a very long time that they've had a race on a Thursday night.
Oh, yeah. I think it was like mid-70s with Richard Petty being the last one to win on a scheduled Thursday night race. I mean, it's kind of odd that we've been paying out points for the Thursday night qualifying races the last couple years at Daytona, so I guess technically you can count those, but you're right. It's been a hefty while since a actual legitimate Florida Championship race was on the schedule for a Thursday night.
But saying that, it's needless to say, I mean, it was a great race overall and an interesting race to watch, again, on a Thursday. I mean, I flew back home Thursday, got home about 5 o'clock to my dad's place, and me and him watched the majority of the race. We kind of fell asleep because, flying takes stuff out of you, and it was his bedtime anyways. But overall, this race, kind of interesting. We saw some big hits, some big crashes that luckily drivers were able to walk away with, but also some drivers who had some bad finishes because of wrecks, but also just because of some misfortune, I feel.
Oh, yeah, if you want to talk about misfortune, definitely drivers like Ricky Stenhouse come to mind, where he was running along kind of minding his own business, and then out of nowhere, something electrical gave out, and the car was forced to retire. He finished last. A few slots up away from him, Bubba Wallace, he had ran into a couple incidents where he spun on the front stretch early in the race, and then he was unfortunately a victim of circumstance when Matt Kenseth lost it coming off of turn four, spun right in his path, and he just clobbered the side of the 42, ending the driver in the 43 car's day. Matt DiBenedetto also swept up in a wreck. Joey Logano, Ryan Preece, Chris Buescher, Jimmy Johnson, they finished 32nd through 36 respectively. So just a really hard day in Kansas. We saw quite a few wrecks in that third stage, a couple big pileups even, and a pretty exciting finish, all things considered.
Oh, yeah, that finish you know, half a second finish at some tracks doesn't seem like much, but after the race we had, that it definitely is, especially with this aero package we have. But I mean, one thing we got to say is Ryan Preece definitely had the hardest hit of the night, essentially junking a car that was running pretty decent for himself. Ryan Preece is a really great and really talented race car driver who has ran Xfinity, won in Xfinity, got his first race win ever, actually at the Iowa Speedway, I believe on his first or second outing for Joe Gibbs Racing, went on to do a couple more races for them, then got full-time in the JTG Daughtry cars. And just that hit, it just shows you that he's not invincible from crashes, but he's also lucky, I think, to walk away for how hard of a hit that is. Because I've watched some wrecks at Kansas today, actually, and there's been some very hard hits there.
Oh, you know, Kansas has definitely been a surprising track when it comes to hard blows being dealt out to these drivers. And Ryan Preece, he had one of several wrecks that were pretty nasty throughout the weekend, all of that were made with contact to the inside wall where they got kind of turned down the banking. But and it's been just a rough slog for the JTG Daugherty cars. In the last few weeks, they've only scored a combined total of 13 points between their two cars, and that's just pitiful. And Ryan Preece himself, coming into Kansas, he had three consecutive last-place finishes coming into that race and then walked out of here with a 34th. So it's been a very, very tough stretch for these two cars. But, you know, maybe some way to kind of rejuvenate that team and get some mojo going back. Part owner of that team, the Daugherty part of JTG Daugherty, Brad Daugherty was announced he's coming back to the NBC booth effective this next week to do some pre-race color commentary and even step in the booth for an occasional cup broadcast or even the Xfinity series. So who knows, maybe having Brad Daugherty back involved with the sport in a big way might be a way to kind of rejuvenate that team and get them kind of motivated to get themselves out of the summer slump that they found themselves in, because it's not been pretty there for the 37 and 47, because while Ryan Preece didn't have a last place finish, his teammate Ricky Stenhouse was more than happy to fall on that sword and keep that streak going, unfortunately, for a fourth week.
That's definitely not a streak you want to have, but that is a good point to bring up. Daugherty will be in the booth this in the near future. And by the way, the only win they've ever gotten, he was in the booth. It was for ESPN. He was in the booth with them at Watkins Glen with AJ Allmendinger. Got their first and so far their only win ever at Watkins Glen up in New York. Now, obviously, we will not be at Watkins Glen this year to race. Instead, that is being used as a road course at Daytona, and we will get into that in the next couple weeks because it will be coming up. But overall, this race had a lot of interesting people. It just felt odd for a Kansas race because we had a lot of interesting people finished in the top 15. Michael McDowell just outside the top 15, 16th, which then you had Ty Dillon, who, you know, that 13 car isn't always the best, and William Byron getting a top 10. There's some faces that we don't get to see that much, especially at a mile-and-a-half track like that, running up front. Even Cole Custer with a seventh-place finish. It's weird to look at this at the scoring pylon and see some interesting names in the top 20 and top 15. Brady?
I had myself on mute. No, you're exactly right. We saw some big nights for a lot of drivers that needed some good runs and some devastating nights for some drivers who were right there on that playoff bubble. And we are getting close to the final race and the cutoff. We're down to just seven races left before we go on to our playoff format, and that bubble is closing up. We've seen several drivers already take a spot by winning a race. And we've even seen a couple surprise drivers like Austin Dillon and Cole Custer in recent weeks come out of nowhere and add to their win total. That leaves only those 10 drivers so far have won a race. At least six open spots for points, and it could not be any tighter right now. William Byron is the last driver in on points. He's right now 14th in the standings, though. And he's right now got a 10-point cushion over Tyler Reddick right now for that playoff cutoff, and then Jimmy Johnson 12 points behind those. Then it's going to be Eric Jones 12 points behind those two, and then Jimmy Johnson, who had another terrible run this last week, and he has now slipped to 14 points out of the playoff picture. So you got to keep your eye on that playoff bubble because it's just continuing to tighten up as we get closer and closer to championship time. And there are several big names right now that are not looking pretty good when it comes to that championship picture, including Mr. Seven-time himself, Jimmy Johnson.
That is very true, and especially looking down, you know, people who have not just won championships, because there's not a whole lot in the modern era right now. There are obviously Denny Hamlin, Brad Keselowski, Martin Truex Jr., Kevin Harvick, Kurt Busch, Kyle Busch. But other than those guys and Matt Kenseth as well, but also Jimmy Johnson, there's a lot of people who haven't won a championship, and you just look and you're like, that seems odd. One person right now who won the race, which was Denny Hamlin, edging out Brad Keselowski, he's never won a championship. He's been a contender. He's been in the top four several times for some good runs to get him. But the three-time Daytona 500 champion, who has won five races this year alone, has not ever won a championship. But just about, you know, everyone else that's in the top four has. It's crazy to think that.
And definitely the more we're getting closer and closer to chase time, and the more the 11 team is finding their stride and racking up these wins, the more I feel like this might be Denny Hamlin's most legitimate and best shot at a title. We saw him come close in 2010 and even last year, respectively. Last year definitely had a sting because he had the fastest car there in the closing stages of the 2019 finale. They put way too much tape there on that last pit stop. The car overheated and his championship hopes were done. And that loss has got a sting. And then just a few weeks ago, he was closing in on being able to check off another crown jewel race off his bucket list at Brickyard 400 and had a tire go down, of all things, while he was leading with just a few laps left. And he said that he felt like between the two of those disappointing losses, the loss at Brickyard stung just a little bit more. So this is a driver who's motivated. He's kind of also had a rough summer, but he's got plenty of padding in terms of points as we're looking towards the playoffs. And he's a driver that's got a lot of motivation. And with this year ending this year at Phoenix being the final track instead of Homestead, that's definitely going to play into the 11 team's favor because Phoenix has been one of his better tracks. And honestly, of the drivers on the circuit, I think he's second best to only Kevin Harvick, who is just an absolute Phoenix master. So if Denny and the team can keep up this momentum and keep collecting these wins and put on dominating performances like we saw at Kansas at another mile-and-a-half track, which makes up a bulk of the playoffs, you really can't take your eyes off that team as they're really starting to hit their stride.
That is definitely for sure. So running down the order, Denny Hamlin again winning, leading 57 laps, the most out of any driver. So not just a great day, but a great run for him and got some playoff points. Brad Keselowski second, Martin Truex Jr., Kevin Harvick, Eric Jones, their top five, Eric Almirola, Cole Custer with a fabulous run for himself in seventh, Alex Bowman, Kurt Busch, and William Byron in the top 10, Kyle Busch, Chase Elliott, Tyler Reddick, Clint Bowyer, Ty Dillon, your top 15, Mike McDowell, Matt Kenseth, Daniel Suarez, John Hunter Nemechek, and Ryan Blaney, your top 20. Corey LaJoie, J.J. Yaley, Christopher Bell, Gwynn Hoff, and Josh Blicky, top 25. Garrett Smithley, Austin Dillon, Ryan Newman, Joey Gase, Brennan Poole, the top 30. Reed Sorensen, Jimmy Johnson, Chris Buescher, Ryan Preece, Joey Logano, your top 35. Matt D. Benedetto, Bubba Wallace, Timmy Hill, B.J. McLeod, and Ricky Stenhouse Jr. is your top 40. So overall, that race was pretty good. Quite a few cautions, including a bunch of spins and a few accidents on the backstretch, which continued over not just from the Cup race, but also to all the other races, including the ARCA race, of some wrecks on the backstretch. It just was weird to keep seeing this as a continuing, I don't want to say wreck, but just issue. You know, you look at all of the guys who have ran there, and it's interesting to see who was having problems coming off of the turn. Was a lot of off of turn two, I should say, onto the backstretch was where a lot of people were having issues.
Oh yeah, no, definitely we were seeing a lot of, especially off corner exit, where we were seeing a lot of drivers break loose and lose control. And this was the first race in a while where we didn't have that PJ1 traction compound down in the corners, where we really just had the Kansas Speedway and everything that track surface can offer the racing, the racing world right now as far as competition. And honestly, I think that's why it was one of the better races we've seen in a while, because you weren't fighting that traction compound, which is fickle as all get out, and can really alter the complexion of a race just because of how much it can drastically alter the racing surface with as far as its, you know, stickiness and whether or not it rakes up marbles and makes it almost slick as ice to be driving on. So we just got to see them really just kind of take it to the track. Goodyear brought a good tire, so that really had some good give up, where we were able to see, you know, them fall off on the long runs and actually play some tire strategy. So a very, very good race from there, and I'm really hoping it kind of leads to more trends where we don't see that traction compound laying down, because I feel like it was a good idea in theory and in practice, but in execution, it really hasn't turned a good race like we thought it would.
That is for sure. So another, the next day we had a double header, kind of. It was the ARCA and the trucks. Will we just talk about trucks? Because ARCA, and I think Brady can agree to me of this, ARCA is kind of a blowout season right now because of some issues with not getting enough teams to the track and not getting enough competitive cars to the track to compete. I hate to say it like that, but honestly, that's the truth.
Oh, yeah, no, COVID definitely did not do that racing series any favors. It was always kind of a series that was just kind of hanging on, you know. It had some decent crowds, but it was really just one, I guess in this case, pandemic away from not being able to have a very sustainable future. And so hopefully things kind of go back to normal and we can kind of get that series back up on its feet. But, yeah, definitely 2020 is going to be a really hard season for that long-storied racing series.
Now, one thing I want to say, because I've been hearing this on some other places, is that ARCA in NASCAR, it used to be ABC. It was ARCA, Busch, and Cup. That's how you would climb up the ladder. It has quite changed, literally. It's now not ARCA. It's not often you see an ARCA driver go from ARCA Truck Cup to Xfinity. More or less, it's K&N Truck, some ARCA. It's kind of odd, but now we see the trucks having more attention, especially with what's going on. And, man, that truck race on a Friday night, that was – interesting, to say the least.
And honestly, it was really kind of interesting because we had a late evening truck race and then we had an early afternoon truck race, and they were two completely different races. The Friday night race had some good side-by-side action, but it was very tame, not a whole lot of cautions, very orderly. We had some great racing, but very clean racing. But then the very next day, Saturday, we saw a lot more cautions, a lot more slick conditions, drivers really fighting the handling on their trucks and really kind of getting into each other more. And both races were fantastic, but they were offering completely different, fascinating reasons for their entry.
That is for sure. And one thing I want to say is if you look at the victory of margin on both races, Friday night's race, 2.928 seconds, almost 3 seconds. Saturday's race, 0.32 seconds. And that says a lot right there. The first race, of course, we will go chronologically. We'll talk about the truck race, which was the Blue Emu Maximum Pain Relief 200, which, if you know Blue Emu, they had some interesting things happen to them during the pandemic iRacing. We won't go too much into it because we have talked about it before. But the overall, that race, interesting because you had six trucks that did not finish the race, at least running. That included Spencer Davis in the 11, Ross Chastain in the 40, Corbin Forrester, Norm Benning, Brendan Doubts, and Kevin Duan. Those six trucks had issues, whether they were instances where they had maybe brushed up against the wall, brake issues, crash handling, or power steering. But overall, I mean, having this many trucks on the lead lap, which was the last lead lap car was Tanner Gray, 18th, and up all on the same lap. It was kind of interesting to see they were all in the lead lap and still only 3 seconds of a victory of margin.
Oh, yeah, no, it was definitely your more standard by-the-numbers kind of mile-and-a-half race for that first truck event, but there's nothing really wrong with that. I mean, it was still very entertaining racing, like you said. We still got plenty of good side-by-side action, and what a statement-making event for Shiggy Ettore and that entire 16 team. Austin Hill has definitely not been the season he was wanting. They showed a lot of promise, especially after proving a lot of the naysayers wrong last year with their amazing performance all season long, really, and almost even a championship run out of them. Unfortunately, they came up just a little bit short, which is a shame because they won the last race of the season, so you really can't help but wonder what might have been for that team if they were able to put together the whole package and make it there. But, no, so they finally got that first win under their belt. They kind of ripped that Band-Aid off, and they've got some great momentum, too. We're getting closer and closer to playoff time. I know I've said it a few times already, but, I mean, this is definitely where the money's going to get paid out. So we're going to be the tension and all the competition in all three series. It starts to really ratchet up because now it's time when they're going to pay out the big bucks, and you can't rest on your laurels anymore. You really got to go for it and show what you and your team could do.
Especially if you look at the points right now, Austin Hill is the leader. Not even looking at wins, just overall points. Austin Hill, Ben Roach, Sheldon Creed. Two of those guys have won races. Austin Hill and Sheldon Creed. Kristen Eckes and Brett Moffitt. They have not won as the that's the top five. They have not won a race. But it's crazy to see that Austin Hill, the consistency that he's had, which again, consistency pays off in the sport. We saw Matt Crafton use that, and we have seen other drivers use consistency to not just get possible championships, but get to the contingency of being a champion. So consistency right now is shown, shows that you can do better than getting a win. Because even Grant Infinger, who has won, I believe, he's just won one race this year, he is still seventh in points without the win. It's weird to look at points, not even with wins, and you see someone who just got their first win of the season at the top of the board. He's actually been at the top of the board for quite a while.
Oh, no, and like I said, that really just is a testament to the whole strength of that 16 operation. We saw it with Brett Moffitt when they claimed the 2018 championship, and we're seeing it right now with Austin Hill. I really feel like they learned a lot in that first season together, especially the heartbreak of not making it to Homestead after having such an impressive season all year long. I really feel like they're going to be someone you're going to have to really keep an eye on as we're getting closer and closer to playoff time.
I've always looked forward to seeing the playoffs because you have I don't want to say underfunded, but you see smaller teams like Hizutori team, you know, that team coming out, win the champion 2018. They bring Austin Hill, who got them their first win at Daytona. He wins the season opener. People think it's a fluke, but then throughout the season, Austin Hill was getting better and better, even picking up another win or two. And then he goes into playoffs, misses it just barely at Phoenix to get into the top four, but bounces back at Homestead, just like you said. If the stars were to have aligned and he had those few extra points to get into the top 10, or into the top four, I should say, we would not have Matt Crafton as champion. If everything played out just like it did, we would have had Austin Hill as a champion, who Austin, he's been racing in the Truck Series for quite a while now. You know, this is his third or fourth full-time season. He was running with Tyler Young Motorsports for at least a year, I remember. I don't know if it's 2 years or what, but he kind of came from there, and people were like, it doesn't seem like a good fit. But then at Daytona and further on into the season last year in 2019, he kind of showed that, hey, yeah, I can actually compete. You put me in equipment like this, I can get the same results, if not be better.
And what the results he's been putting up is definitely the statement he needed to make. He was coming up under a lot of fire, like you said. And the only way to turn off those naysayers and really to stand your ground and prove your worth and that you belong is by doing exactly what he's doing, which is going out and winning. And you can't also forget this, but right now he is leading the regular season points. And NASCAR, to their credit, has really done a good job of trying to bring back some meaning to consistency throughout the season. And they have put an extra incentive on being the leader of the point standings when it comes time for the start of the very first playoff race. And it comes with some bonus points as well. So we're really going to keep our eye on that, especially as we get closer and closer to the playoff time, to see if Austin Hill can hold on to that top spot and claim that 15-point bonus.
And that will help him big, not just for the start of the actual playoffs, but that carries on throughout the entire playoffs up until the final four entry. Even then, you still kind of got to hit your mark still. But looking throughout this entire race, the top five consists of a lot of regulars, and then the brand new rookie Derek Krause getting his first top five at a mile and a half track his first one, and it just was good to see that, you know, Derek's got a lot of talent, and you said this last week, and even the week before, I believe, this no practice, no qualify helps him show off his talent because they don't have time to tune in the truck. The time they get to tune the truck itself is on pit stops, and that is like crazy to think that he's been this consistent and this good with the lack of experience he has on a lot of these tracks.
And honestly, I really got to hand it to a lot of the drivers right now that we're seeing that are really rising to the occasion under this format. Drivers just like Eric Kraus, all of the rookies we're seeing in the Cup Series side of things that are just continuing to be super impressive week in and week out. We're just really seeing a lot of young drivers really being put into a very unfortunate and hard situation and just absolutely rising to the occasion. And that's what really separates the good drivers that are going to last for a long time in the sport and the drivers that are going to be kind of, you know, oh, you remember that name? Oh, man, Casey Atwood was really great. Wasn't he something, you know?
That just brought back some people. But, yeah, and you know, on the point side, too, in the regular points, he's ninth. I mean, he's even in front of Matt Crafton, who you would think as someone that's won the championship three times, he would be a little more with consistency. Obviously, there was some wrecks that weren't his fault, but even him only being 10th right now in points, or at when that race was over, I should say, it kind of puts in perspective. Maybe we got some young talent that's going to be working harder than some other people.
And, you know, you mentioned a driver right there, Matt Crafton. What a weekend he had. A solid fourth-place finish in the Friday night race, and then we'll get into it here just a little bit more. But he ended up finally breaking into victory lane Saturday morning in the second running of this Kansas 200 weekend. And that was his first win in 65 starts. He went his entire 2019 championship campaign without a win. I believe that's back to 2018 when he won Eldora, when he got his last win in the Series 4. Finally breaking through, and so it was a very, very good race for him. And also for the entire Thor Sport Racing team, in this race, you had four drivers from Thor Sport, all four of their drivers in the top ten, with Grandin Finger third, Crafton there in fourth, a couple spots back, Ben Rhodes had a solid night in seventh, and Johnny Sauter in ninth. So definitely it's been kind of an up-and-down season for them as they've been adjusting to becoming the new front face of the Blue Ovals in the Truck Series division, moving away from the Toyotas that they had so much success with. And so there's been some growing pains there and definitely some hardships, but I feel like they're starting to finally come into their own and really start to hit the ground running.
As a team that has ran multiple manufacturers, they've ran with Chevy, they ran with Ford, and they've ran with Toyota, it's great to see them bouncing up to this. You know, obviously they have won before with some Fords. I believe it was Chase Briscoe who won at Eldora in the 27 truck. So they're not at a total loss. They are getting a lot of – they've learned a lot, and they keep on learning with these Ford bodies and manufacturing help from them. So it's awesome to see. So to run down that race, Austin Hill with the first place, Brett Moffitt, the Iowa boy, in second, Grant Infinger in fifth, Matt Crafton fourth, Derek Cross at top five, Zane Smith, Ben Rhodes, Sheldon Creed, Johnny Sauter, and Todd Gilliland, not David, Todd Gilliland, in 10th, Ty Majeski, Brendan Poole with a great run for himself, Kristen Eckes, Brandon Jones, and Chase Prudhee in the top 15, Raphael Lazard got it right this time, Austin Lane Self, Tanner Gray, Timmy Hill, and Corey Roper in the 20th up, Natalie Decker, Tate Fulgham, Spencer Boyd, Cody Roper, and Dawson Creed in the 25th and up, Robbie Rhodes, Stuart Friesen, Clay Greenfield, Spencer Davis, Jordan Anderson, your top 30, Jennifer Jo Cobb, Ray Silica, Tyler Ankrum, Ross Chastain, Corbin Forrester, 35th up, Norm Benning, Brian Dotz, and Kevin Duall is your 38th and last place finisher. So we leave. We go home we go back to the hotel, and we come back the next day. The first race is the Xfinity race, the Kansas Lottery 250. And again, close race at the finish, 4.40 finish from first to second. But a surprise winner in my mind because, and this driver hasn't been, I don't want to say the best driver, but even I said, all right, it's time for him to kind of perform, or actually it's time for him to get out so someone could else get that. Brandon Jones with another win, his second win overall.
And another clutch win, too. This is his second consecutive win at the mile-and-a-half track at Kansas Motor Speedway. And both wins come in dramatic. Late restart takes for the dash for the wins, where he's been able to pull off some really clutch moves and, you know, set up great on a restart. In this particular instance, he came from restarting in the third row. I didn't think he could come from that far back and win the race, but he restarted fifth, had an amazing, you know, head of steam as they were coming off of turn four and just blew the doors off of Austin Cindric and Harrison Burton, who were racing side-by-side. They were trying to get around Ryan Sieg, who held on for an impressive fourth-place finish in the 39 car. But overall, what a fantastic race we saw for the Xfinity Series division.
It was very interesting to see him back in victory lane. Now, this is his third career victory overall, but it just showed that, honestly, for me, I'm still out. I still don't have a good feeling that he's going to continue to grow like this. I feel like he, and I could be wrong. I hope I am, but it's just like Michael Annett is another example. You know, Michael got very lucky got his first one at Daytona, and, you know, he's just not as aggressive. And that's the same thing with Brandon Jones. Like, he's aggressive, but not too aggressive. You know, there's a difference between being aggressive enough to win and aggressive enough to not get walked over. I feel Brandon is aggressive enough to not get walked over, but not aggressive enough to win on a more consistent basis. Obviously, he has three wins in the past 2 years, but then you look at Austin Cindric right behind him, who has gotten three wins, three races in a row. Yes, there's a technicality that Kyle Busch had the win, it was taken away, but then you keep looking. Harrison Burton, in his first year out full-time, he gets a win. Ross Chastain, who's climbed up with better equipment to get better. Justin Haley with a win. I mean, I don't feel like Brandon has – I don't know if it's the confidence or just a chutzpah to really get him into a championship mode.
See, I think it's the opposite. I just think that he was really unprepared when he got a lot of his big breaks and really – was super inexperienced and didn't have enough, you know, knowledge to really take advantage of those experiences. Most notably, his tenure at Richard Childress Racing Equipment, especially when his time in the Xfinity Series driving the 33, there was really no excuse for him to not win in that car. That was a very race-winning, proven car. A lot of drivers, a lot of teammates came and went through that shop at the same time, and they were winning races. And he just never could put together the full deal. And then he leaves, and just a few years later, they win the championship. You know, and then he lands at Gibbs, and it took him a couple seasons to really find his footing there. He's been in the 19 car now since 2018, and it took him about a season and a half, almost damn near two, to finally get that maiden win with the team. But this year, it's been a whole different Brandon Jones. He's really stepped up, really seems to be confident behind the car, really knows what he wants as far as feel goes, and it seems like all that patience, all that practice, all that time is finally starting to pay off, where he's really starting to flex the muscle and show that why he got the ride in the first place and show the talent that we all knew was kind of there, but had really just been kind of, you know, been lacking these last few years.
I still have it, and I'll say it like this too. He was in trucks for quite a few seasons, and he finally got his first truck win this year. I mean, this is personally to me, I need to see him be more consistent is another thing. You know, obviously getting wrecked out, that's different. If you get wrecked because of someone else's dumb mistake, that's a whole different story. But I think he's just not as consistent. You know, yes, he's won on the mile and a half tracks, which that's great because that's the majority of the schedule is made up right now. But that consistency kind of ends when playoffs hit because you'll have more short tracks and you'll have a road course and you'll have Talladega. I mean, yeah, you'll have still some of those cookie cutters, but once you hit Phoenix is its own track. Like, there's no track other like it, not just because the start-finish line is in an odd place, but just because of how it is, I feel he's going to, you know, he's having a great season. I'm not going to argue that. Having two wins this year is phenomenal for not just him, but for that team. But I just feel like he needs to give more chutzpah to honestly get to that championship contendency. If he can give more effort or even just show, hey, I'm here to actually compete and not just run up front, I feel like he would definitely be in the top four going to Phoenix this year.
Well, you know, you mentioned it there. He's got two wins, but Zach, did you forget where he got that other win at?
I kind of have. Where was it?
It was at Phoenix. So all I'm saying is if he makes it to the top four, he might have a pretty decent shot at the whole thing.
Mm, yeah. But again, you know, this is just me looking at it as someone that's worked on these cars and has talked to many drivers ranging from, you know, top quality guys, you know, I've talked and hung out with people like Ross, like Harrison, like Hemric, even Allgaier. I've hung out with him a bunch of times. And honestly, I see more in some of those guys than I do in him. Not downplaying, you know, he led 10 laps. He did win overall. He got the 5 bonus points. It's just hard for me to really see that this year is going to be the year he can be something other than a 2-time winner. You look at both the Fords and the Camp, they've won 3 races plus each. I believe they've won 8 combined. And then Toyota's led and won some races, and Chevy's right behind them. But I don't have the wave of emotion of like, oh, yeah, Brandon Jones. It's just like, okay, Brandon, I mean, it's the same way I felt as Michael in that. And I'm a, you know, Midwest, Illinois, Iowa boy. I was amazed that he – or I was happy he won it, but I was just like, you've been racing for so long, you finally got your first win. It's not like, you know, Michael Waltrip, who went 460-plus races without a win, and he wins his first race at the Daytona 500. That's a little more, you know, special as a first win, but it's just like, okay, you guys have been in some grade A equipment, yes, you've been in some bad equipment, but it's just like, is this pure luck? Is it good strategy? What can it be? So I'm not playing him out. I think he'll do well throughout the first 2 rounds, but when it gets to that third round where they cut it down to the final 4 at the end of the third round, I don't think he'll be a contender for the final 4.
Yeah, there's a lot of time and a lot of racing that can happen between now and then. Not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying that you might be wrong.
Well, just like you say, there's still a chance, right?
There's always a chance. Especially when it comes to our boy Brand Flakes.
But overall, this race, not a lot of cautions. Only 5 cars did not finish, running. Jesse Little, Brett Moffitt, Dexter Bean, Kyle Weatherman, and Stephen Lynch are the 5 cars that didn't finish. And overall, 175 laps, top 13. And Kaz Grala, who's making his first start of the year, I even forgot he was running for Richard Childress Racing, getting a 13th. A lot of small guys up there, Jeremy Clemens, Brandon Brown, all up there in the top 15. And like you said, Ryan Sieg in the 4th spot. I love seeing that, especially at tracks that, you know, those smaller teams don't tend to get a lot of, I don't want to say attention, but they don't get good runs, I guess. Often you see them more towards the back, but this is great to see all those guys in the top 15 and even in the top 10.
And it's really important you mention drivers like Ryan Sieg, because he is fighting for his life to try and make, here I go talking again about the playoffs. It's almost like we're getting down to crunch time here, people, and you don't seem to be caring about the playoffs. But, right now he's in a tightly locked battle between himself, Brandon Brown, Jeremy Clements, for making that final cutoff there at the 12th place. Currently right now, Ryan Sieg is at 11th. Brandon Brown is holding on to that 12th and final cutoff spot. And Jeremy Clements is the only driver within striking distance to do anything about it. Jeremy Clements right now, he is, looks like, if I do my math, 32 points out of the 12th place cutoff. So a bit of a comfy cushion, but there's still plenty of wild card races to go, including the Daytona road course. And Clements, having got his one win on a road course, has shown that anything is possible. And we still even have the Daytona race on the normal oval, a complete wild card that we can never discount the opportunity that presents any driver that enters that race for a chance at a victory. So still a lot can happen, but we got to keep our eyes squarely on that playoff bubble.
And that bubble is something that will always be said and be talked about because of the fact of what it is. It's purely a bubble of chance. Like, it's a chance you can get in, it's a chance you can get out. and that's where these small teams really can excel because of people. You know, Jeremy Clements got in with a win at Road America in 2017. I was there for that race. But then you can get him with that consistency. Ross Chastain made the inaugural playoffs by points with the 4 car of Johnny Davis Racing. And it was that consistency that got him. And I'll keep saying that because right now, Ross Chastain, even though he finished fifth, he's consistently up there, and he's still in fourth, you know, not counting the wins. I mean, being that far up in Austin Scissor, Chase Briscoe are obviously the runaways right now with as many wins. But then Noah Gregson, Ross Chastain, Justin Haley, Harrison Burton, two guys that have won, Ross is ahead of them in the regular points. So it's definitely something that this consistency, I'll always say it, and I will say it to the day I die, consistency will play off so much better than just getting that one lucky win. But overall, man, I look at Ryan Sieg, and I'm excited to see what he's going to be able to do.
And there's still plenty of racing action to go. I mean, just like in the Truck Series and Cup Series, there's still that all-important regular season point title up for grabs and those 15 additional bonus points to kick off round one of the playoffs. And right now, Austin Cindric is in possession of that coveted spot. But it's a very close battle up front. Chase Briscoe a scant 4 points back. Cindric on the strength of 3 consecutive wins. Briscoe the overall winner so far this season with 5 total victories to his credit. And then behind them, the fiery Noah Gregson with 2 wins and a lot of controversy on the way to a third-place points run so far, 56 points out of that top spot. And then Ross Chastain, the consistency king, 50 points out. Those are the 4 drivers right now that have the most legitimate shot at that title. And with a lot of unknowns in these next few weeks, any one of them could be walking away with those bonus points.
And I think really when you look at what is coming up for them, you know, mile and a half tracks are dwindling down for this regular season. We have a road course, we have Michigan, and we have Dover for these guys. None of them are mile and a half, so it's definitely going to be Michigan's going to be one of the most – will be a unique track for them because it's just – it's a massive racetrack like Fontana, which I feel like Harrison Burton will excel at. But then you have the road course, which will be the wild card for everyone and anyone. You look at, and you said this, Jeremy Clements, who's won there. But then you have Austin Cindric, who's actually running IMSA cars on the road course. So it's going to be an interesting run overall for them in the next 4 weeks, I believe. Four weeks will be the end of August. So, yeah, in the next 4 weeks, we'll have – an interesting run for these guys and see what they're going to be capable of. I'll be excited to see where they end up. And one thing I'm looking forward to, will be seeing these Xfinity cars on the road course at Daytona.
And we got a couple of also grueling weeks coming up too. I think it's the Cup Series that has the doubleheader at the Monster Mile, which there's one track on the circuit that seems to be a pretty wide consensus that's going to be a pain in the ass to do a doubleheader at. It's going to be the Monster Mile there in Dover, Delaware, because you want to talk about a tough track that's tough on you, really beats you up in every corner. The drivers are definitely going to have their hands full that weekend. And we've even got some intrigue coming up this next week with the New Hampshire race, a track that's kind of flat, lower speeds, and really lends itself to being kind of tricky. So far, we're a few days out from the racing weekend, but already the consensus in the garage area is that Kevin Harvick and that team will be the one to watch. They've been pretty good at the 1 mile oval there in New Hampshire, and it seems like they're so far the early odds on favorite to unload fast and to continue their strong season. But I wouldn't count on a guy like Denny Hamlin, who's also had a lot of success there at the New Hampshire Mile and could also be a very, very potent threat come Sunday.
I was about to say, you can't ignore Denny Hamlin for that one because he's won quite a bit of lobster there, and he's not a big fan. But as we run through the finishing order here, again, it's just a lot of underdog teams. And I say it like that because underdog and underfunder are two different things. Brandon Jones, Austin Cindric, Harrison Burton, Ryan Sieg, and Ross Chastain, your top 5. Justin Haley, Daniel Hemric, Michael Annette, Riley Herbst, and Justin Allgaier, your top 10. Brandon Brown, Jeremy Clements, Kaz Grala, Chase Briscoe, and Noah Gregson, your top 15. Colin Garrett, Jeffrey Earnhardt, Tommy Joe Martin, Timmy Hill with a fantastic finish for his team, and Josh Williams in the top 20. Alex LeBay, Matt Schneider, Bailey Curry, David Starr, Ryan Vargas, top 25, Matt Millis, Cody Vanderwall, Joe Graff Jr., Chad Fincham, and Vinny Miller, your top 30. BJ McLeod, haven't seen this name in a while, Gerard Avar Jr., Jesse Little, Brett Moffitt, and Dexter Bean, your top 35. and Kyle Weatherman, Stephen Lynch, top 37. Overall, I like the Xfinity race. It was odd seeing it during the day at Kansas, because I don't feel like any time we go to Kansas, we see a day race there for Xfinity. I might just be losing my mind.
I'm pretty sure actually it was the truck race that ran the afternoon, and the Xfinity series ran that later evening hours, I thought.
Eh, could be wrong. But talking about the truck series, holy crap, day and night race. Finish, not just the finish margin of victory 3.24, but holy crap. The end of stage two, it was mayhem, a lot like Pocono.
Oh, yeah. No, we had a insane crash on the front stretch. That took out a total of, if I'm counting this up right, about 9 to 10 trucks, including Johnny Sauter, who went from having a strong top 10 finish the night before to being absolutely trashed on the front stretch. Also took out Stuart Friesen, who's right there on that playoff bubble. It was not the finish that driver was looking for, as he's continuing to struggle in the 2020 campaign. Just been a nightmare season so far for that driver. Other big names that were kind of wiped out in that would include Travis Pastrana, who was making a one-off start. He got wiped up in that. Also Natalie Decker. But the rest of them were mainly some back-of-the-pack teams that weren't going to be factoring into the championship. But still a very, very hard blow for a lot of those underfunded teams. They're just trying to, you know, get the finishes that they can and keep those trucks intact. But no, definitely we saw an uptick in the excitement, an uptick in carnage, and an uptick in the action. It was a complete night and day difference from the night before. And for a lot of these drivers, you know, barring a wreck, they were racing the exact same trucks. And we saw a lot of the same drivers, you know, kind of toss their way around the front. Austin Hill, who won the night before, was definitely heavily featured. Derek Krause with a top five. He ran solidly in the top 10 all day. Also, Matt Crafton, who ended up winning the race, he came away with a very, very good run there and an impressive overtime finish. And then Christian Eckes, who continues to impress as he's trying to figure his way up in the truck series. He had a bit of a tough go of it when the season first started, and the lack of practice, I think, definitely steepened that learning curve. But he's starting to put together solid runs. This is his second place finish in the last three races, so he's definitely starting to turn the curve in that number 18. Grant Enfinger, another impressive run for the 98 team. They're continuing to try and pad their points as they're trying to build off the momentum of their two wins so far this season. So a very, very good race for a lot of drivers that definitely needed it.
One thing I want to say was I knew Travis was going to be in the truck, and Brady and did not believe me until they finally said something. And, man, seeing Travis back at the track as someone that – you know, we both have seen Travis race at Iowa. I met him several times. He's a great guy. Just tough luck. I mean, he spun out. He did finish only two laps down. At one point, I believe he was at least four or five laps down. So to come back only finishing two laps down, put some great pit strategy into it, finishing 22nd, which coming back from having racing in over a year and a half, is not bad for him. And that's something that I want a lot of people to understand is, Travis was scheduled to run some races this year. At least there was talks about it, I should say. Nothing was set in stone. Then COVID hit, and it was some sponsors talking to Ross saying, hey, we don't want you in the truck again for this doubleheader. It was, I believe, his crew chief at Roush, or at Nice it might have been, or his car chief, I'm sorry, that said, hey, let's just call Travis up. And Travis said, hey, let's go do it. And 22nd, after spinning out, getting into late race caution or wreck on the front stretch, still finishing 22nd on your first time out, man, calling me perfect, purple, I would call that a success.
And, you know, if it's any credit, he finished the highest of all of his three Nice Motorsports teammates, because all three of them, they ran into their own problems. Ty Majeski way down in 30th, and then Natalie Decker a few spots behind in 35th, so... You know, in comparable equipment, he was the superior one of the three. So that's also got to account for something. But, no, just like you, I was really tickled to death to see him back in the car. He's such a great personality, and I was really disappointed when his NASCAR tenure kind of came to an abrupt end there after the 2013 season when the Roush deal didn't go that well. You could definitely tell his confidence was battered, but I'm glad to see he's still, you know, open to returning, you know, trying a few races and maybe trying to still – take a shot at that elusive win and maybe try and really take another crack at it. I would know there's a lot of fans out there that would love to have him back. You know, a part of me kind of hoped that maybe he might bring Red Bull back in, because I really, really miss the Red Bull team too. And I know that they have a strong, strong personal sponsorship deal there. So a part of me hopes that that would be kind of a cool, unexpected bonus. But no, even if it's just for that one race, it was definitely great to have him back a part of the field, because he really adds a lot to a race weekend.
I mean, overall, you look at the truck series for us, and like you even said, a lot of these guys use the same truck. Obviously, Matt Crafton, with a top five finish the race before, the day before, getting a win here, obviously shows that that truck was consistent. Same with Grant Enfinger and Ben Rhodes. Obviously, Johnny Sauter, a little different story, but when you get wrecked up, there's not much you can do for yourself. But even Derek Cross, I mean, getting a seventh place finish, Austin Hill in the top 10, with those kind of cars. Even Zane Smith and Chase Purdue all getting top 10 finishes in trucks that they probably ran the day before. I know a majority of these guys did, because they didn't wreck. Even if there's a little beating and banging, they just did a little pounding out, put a new sticker on it. All right, you're good to go, head out. It's great to see that these teams are taking this, what we're being dealt, you know, having to run multiple races, even in a weekend like the trucks this season, this week, and next couple weeks we'll have the Cup guys doing doubleheaders at Michigan and Dover, and probably doing the same strategy. It's great to see that they're adapting to this, and even maybe using that as strategy for the next race. Obviously, we have two different winners. We didn't have a back-to-back winner like we did at Kentucky for Xfinity, but it's great to see them working hard to get the advantage for what they have.
And I feel like this is going to be a really, you know, kind of by the numbers, really grit your teeth and show what you kind of got kind of moment. So we'll see which teams rise to the occasion and which teams will have some work to do as they're getting closer and closer to the end of the regular season. And looking down the field, you know, we got to talk about one team, GMS Racing. They've kind of, you know, they've had kind of an up and down season. At times they're looking invincible, you know, like the GMS that we've gotten used to, where they're going to be threatening for wins week in and week out. And then in a lot of other cases, it seems like they can't get out of their own way. And this race weekend was a perfect, you know, example of that. They had pretty solid runs for a majority of their teams in the Friday night race, you know, where a lot of them got some top 10s. But then in the Saturday race, only two managed top 10s, but the rest of their five drivers ran into each other and some trouble. Most notably when racing for a solid position in the top 10, Zane Smith and Tyler Ankrum kind of tangled there and turned Ankrum head onto the wall right in front of Brett Moffitt, putting the Anchor Machine and Brett Moffitt well down the finishing order there in 27th and 28th, respectively. And Sheldon Creed finished one spot ahead of them in 26th. So those three Chevys, definitely not the weekend they were looking for. And for Tyler Ankrum, it was two heartbreaking races in a row. He, in the first race of the weekend there, Friday night, had some mechanical failures, and that took him out of the contention after he had to go take the car behind the wall to get his brakes looked at. So he was hoping for a bounce back after the disappointment Friday night. Was running solidly in the top 10 and top 5 for most of the afternoon. And then when it all came down to it, when the tips were on the line and when, you know, going was really going to start to matter, he unfortunately got taken out by a teammate. It was one of those racing deals. You hate to see it, but definitely not what him and that team were looking for. If they continued to struggle in their first year together, trying to find the magic and the speed that Ankrum had in his rookie season last year driving for David Gilliland Racing.
Well, and also Tyler actually did split duties. He lost some funding even after winning the race at Kentucky that got him for the playoffs, where he actually had to hop into Joe Nemechek's start park truck at one point during the year last year. But you're right, you know, GMS has always been a team. They used to be a team that they were like, okay, I would say it like this. They were kind of like the Tyler Young Motorsports equivalent. They would be at the track, have decent runs, and then there was a switch there that happened, whether it was bringing on some different driving talent or even better equipment overall, that kind of shot them to a championship contender team, especially with Johnny Sauter getting them a championship, I believe, or if not contending for one. And then you had Brett Moffitt. One more time?
2016, Johnny Sauter won the championship for GMS.
That's right. I knew. And that's why you're the stats guy. But you just look at it, and it's kind of arched to where I'll put them at about a 7 overall. You know, They have some great runs. They don't have as many wins as they should at this part of the season. Obviously, with this whole COVID crap, it's kind of messed with not just them but everyone. But the other teams have adapted really well, and then they are one team that kind of hasn't. But it's just hard overall for a lot of these teams because some of these teams, like Kyle Busch Motorsports, has more data to go off of because they also use some data from the trucks or the Xfinity Indy Cup. I know it's not the same kind of stuff, but they can take notes on possible throttle tracing and tire wear and this and that. So it is odd to see GMS kind of struggling right now. Even though they got two trucks in the top 10 for this race, like you said, three of them barely finished in the top, did not even finish in the top 25. I'm sorry. So I agree with you. I think it's kind of a struggle for them this year.
And also, you know, another team that really kind of had a solid night but was kind of, you know, bouncing back and forth. I don't know where this was. Kyle Busch Motorsports, you know, we've kind of talked at length about how I feel like that the team itself has kind of been down on power and really been affected by the no testing going on and everything with COVID and all that fallout. But these last few weeks, we've started to see a lot of speed out of their two rookie drivers. And, of course, the 51 has been pretty potent these last few weeks. And we're starting to see them maybe start to come turn that corner a little bit, really start to find that, a lot of that missing speed. And we saw even Rafael Lassard with a solid run in both races. He finished 11th in the Saturday morning race. So we might finally start to see them kind of bounce back, as it were, and maybe starting to contend for wins as we're getting down to crunch time here.
That is for sure. So running through the finishing order, because we're just about at time, Matt Crafton getting his first win in over 60 races at Kansas. Kristen Eckes, Grant Infinger, Tanner Gray, which is a great run for him himself, and Ben Roger, top five, Austin Hill, Derek Cross, Brandon Jones, Zane Smith, Chase Priddy in the top 10, Rafael Izard, and Brendan Poole, who got back-to-back top 12s, Austin Wayne Self, Spencer Davis, and Jordan Anderson getting an impressive run in the top 15. Tyler Hill, Timmy Hill's brother, both got to run in the 16th position. Peyton Fogelman, Spencer Boyd, Ryan Huff, Todd Gillen, there's your top 20. Robbie Leeds, Travis Pastrana, Kevin Dow, Ray Silica, Norm Benning is your top 25. Sheldon Creed, Brett Moffitt, Tyler Ingram, Cody Raufu, and Ty Majeski, your top 30. Clay Greenfield, Jennifer Jo Cobb, Johnny Sauter, Stuart Friesen, and Natalie Decker, your top 35. And Corey Roper and Brendan Dietz is your 37th and last place. So races are still here. We got, I believe the Cup cars are the only racing this weekend, correct?
They've lost me with the schedule. Hold on, let me go back. I'm in New Hampshire. I know that much.
I know that one, yeah.
I know the truck series is off. Yes, and also the Xfinity series is off as well because they're going to return at the Road America track August 8th. So both Xfinity series and trucks, they're off this weekend, so it'll be a lone weekend for the Cup Series drivers. So going to be kind of a light weekend, which I know a few people, myself included, will be kind of okay with that because it's been definitely go these last few weeks. And we're going to be having a lot more packed weekends, especially when we start getting into the doubleheader weekends at Michigan and at Dover here in a few weeks. So it's going to be a foot off, firmly on the throttle from here on out. So I'll be pretty okay to have a couple of light weekends as we're getting closer and closer to the first playoff race of the season.
That is for sure. So I will be looking forward to it. And it's going to be weird only to talk about one race for an hour and a half. Maybe we might have to figure something out during the week. So that way we can fill some more time.
Well, there are plenty of rumors and notes that we didn't get to tonight, but I feel like we can at least make it an hour long show to talk about the one race and all the news stories that we've kind of laid down on the floor these last few weeks. So we'll talk about it, but I feel like there's still plenty of some B coverage stuff that's kind of been lost in our race reports these last few weeks that we can catch people up on.
That's very true.
Maybe
but
I can
also,
bring
who knows.
Maybe I can bring pictures, you know.
Well, and we might. And something crazy could happen during this race that wouldn't be new to us. Something crazy and outlandish happens that it will take up a lot of time. But from Studio G to Myrtle Beach to all the way in Des Moines, Iowa, it's been a fun night.
It has been. Glad everybody's back and we're doing great. So I guess we'll see everybody next week. Same bat time, same bat channel, Tuesday night, 10 p.m. on The Charlotte Line. Everybody with me now. The Charlotte Line.
Oh, The Charlotte. I thought you were saying that. Goodbye.
Let's say it all together. The Charlotte Line.
The Charlotte Line.
Okay.
Got it. Yeah.
See you next week. Bye-bye.
I am going to bed. I am tired. Where is she?